Welcome to Business Unfiltered, where we dive into the raw and unfiltered world of running a business with Mercer and Jeff Sauer.
Welcome back to Business Unfiltered. It's Mercer. I am here with the illustrious Jeff Sauer. And today we are talking about the CFO as a role in your organization. So, as is tradition, Mr. Sauer, when you think about CFO, what do you think about?
Yeah, so I think at first I immediately think of C-suite, a very expensive person on a publicly traded company who has some kind of advanced degree, probably was a CPA, might be an attorney even, and they are in charge of everything. They're in charge of the public accounting to make sure that the publicly traded company is compliant. And that's like a beast, right? Like that's something that seems so unattainable to the business that I have run and the business that we talk to, that I almost then have to be like, is there another role? Is CFO like literally a role, or is CFO a state of mind and state of being in your business? But yeah, I think of a publicly traded company and somebody who's very accountable. Every move they make, every single email they write could affect the markets. That's what I think of when I think of a CFO.
Yeah, it's like this is the one that's on those earnings calls, you know, answering questions to the analyst. And it's funny because I think the same thing. And I think some of it's just because that role, you know, or the title, right? The chief financial officer of you just think C-suite level, which instantly thinks enterprise and big giant stuff. So obviously that's not necessarily the target of this podcast, right? Most individuals listening to this podcast are on the small business side, right? That are bringing this out. So when I saw this as a topic and you and I were talking about it, the idea was bringing this, the DNA or the sort of the spirit of the CFO mentality into a small business. So how do you think about that? Like, because obviously we don't need to hire a CFO as a sole role in a very small organization, because that person would be very bored most of the day because they're just not doing a whole lot. But you do need to have that CFO mentality through the role, right? You still have to account for that role and make sure that you know, whatever a CFO may or may not be doing in the organization is actually happening in your organization. So what are the specifics when you think about it? I guess from a strategic perspective of integrating, is that the owner that plays that role? Do you bring in advisors to play that role? Do you just use your CPA to play that role? Do you use your bookkeeper to play that role? Like, where do you, especially if you don't have the accounting background, which most entrepreneurs don't.
Yeah. So that's a really good question, because that's exactly what I would think about it. So going back to our last episode, episode 50, we talked about taking something that's complex and chunking it into smaller parts and then saying, what are these things? So let's talk about like the CFO role in a publicly traded company. They deal with shareholders and investors. They deal with internal bookkeeping. You know, they do financial statements. They do planning and forecasting. They make sure your pricing is right. They do everything, right? So like they're across everything. Well, everything but the talking to shareholders is something that a small business needs to do, yet somebody owns that small business, right? So that there is a level of shareholder communication that needs to happen. Now, if you're doing this all by yourself, which is if you're a one-person business, then you are the CFO in a way. You are sort of internally, if you look at your, if you keep books, which I hope that you do, or even if you keep your bank account, you're actually doing every one of those things every time you look at your account. You're like, hey, how much money is going into my pocket, which is you as a shareholder. You're saying, how much money are we spending, which is you as a forecasting thing. How much money is coming in? What's our cash flow? How much money has going out to the product and everything like that? So you're doing those things. You just haven't really chunked it out specifically. Now, when you do it in a point where you're growing your company, eventually you'll realize that you're not very good at this. Most business owners are not very good at this thing. And using your bank account as your financial system is not good. You're not Sam Bankman-Fried at FTX, you know, who had the worst financials in the history of any company ever. You're not like, you have to mature as a business and you have to do things, right? That's what, like, they were in year two of their business and they didn't have any financial records. So yeah, you start to get the big people, the professionals in there to do that. Now, the first thing you do professionally is you probably get a bookkeeper, because that's a very high return on money invested thing. And it's a very low return on your time invested in bookkeeping. So that's the first thing you do, is you get somebody to put the expenses and the revenue into something that's easy to read and can spit out reports, right?
And just to tie back to the topic, it's like the CFO would normally be the one responsible for getting this stuff done.
Exactly. Right?
Where it's they want to make sure the numbers are in a proper format. And if you're not naturally that person, like some owners might be, right? They just happen to have a bookkeeping background. Great, they can do their own. But most of us are not like that.
Yep.
So the first step is get the numbers into the proper format. And that's where the bookkeeper can come in. So you can instead of hiring a CFO, what we're doing is we're building the CFO, all the things a CFO would do in the small business through the ways a small business needs to do it, which is to say, not by hiring one person, but you hire a series of individuals or bring in a series of systems. So bookkeeping being the first one gets you the numbers in the right spots, in the right formats. Yep. It's kind of how I'm reading that. Okay.
And then,
if that's the first, and what I'm doing, I'm kind of writing down here, like I'm breaking out the roles when you were talking about the CFO, right? So let's get the numbers in the right spot. What happens after that?
Yeah, so a bookkeeper is a big important piece, and then something about like payments out, like accounts receivable and accounts payable, like who do you pay your contractors, do you pay your employees, running payroll, that type of thing is, I think, would be the next level. At least that's with my, like, so I hired a bookkeeper, then I hired somebody to run payroll and to pay contractors, like that's it, right? And then after that, which is pretty discreet as well, it's like, hey, money's coming in, money's going out, let's make sure that we have those things in place, right? Those two roles can give you a cash flow report. It can give you a balance sheet. It can file everything that goes into your taxes. Speaking of taxes, another one that's right along with that is an accountant. It's like a CPA, probably not in your company, somebody external. Even big publicly traded companies have external CPAs for arm's length type, you know, non-emotional stuff. And then the final one is just like a virtual CFO. That would probably be like the highest level. Like I've hired somebody who is a virtual CFO / business coach, and they basically just try to help you increase your revenue and lower your expenses, right? They gear you towards profitability. So those are probably the roles that a small business would take on, and probably the order. You go bookkeeper first, then somebody to pay your taxes or to do file your taxes. You get somebody to pay your expenses out, so you don't have to do it anymore. And then you get into like more of a financial planner or a virtual CFO who will do the forecasting, do all those other things that are the more advanced stuff. Now, in a big company, the CFO role sort of oversees those things, right? They're not actually in the bookkeeping software. They hire a whole level of managers to get that stuff done. And they hire the people to do those things. But they want everything to be good. Like you can't really be that final step, which is like the virtual CFO or the CFO, unless you trust your data. It's actually very similar to what we teach when it comes to measurement. If you don't trust what's going on in there, then you can't really do much, right? So yeah, that's how I look at it. How about you? Did I miss any steps there?
Yeah, that's what I'm writing down here. So it's like, you know, getting the numbers in the right spot, bookkeeper, making sure we're paying taxes accordingly, everything's being organized, I guess, from a business standpoint, legal standpoints or whatever. From that perspective, that's a trained professional. Like, don't try to tackle this on your own unless you happen to be that trained professional, but that's the CPA's job. So now we've got a bookkeeper and a CPA. So the numbers are all in the right spots and the taxes are being, you know, handled in the proper way for tax planning. Then the other thing, so talking about, you know, and maybe you've got HR payroll stuff, like, you know, using a system like ADP or paying somebody to do that. It could also be a lot of bookkeepers and CPAs have that as a thing. So maybe that's being there, but go back to the managing of expenses, the working with your cash flow, the trying to figure out the forecasting, right? Where are we going to be in 6 months? So that sounds like that would be the CFO's job. If we did have a CFO as in a small business, right? They would be thinking about that. Like, okay, are we managing expenses properly? Are we did the client pay, right? The clients that we invoiced, did we actually get paid for those? Or is there somebody that's falling into arrears, right? Where are we going to be in 6 months? What are we going to need to hire more or bring in additional resources? So in that standpoint, is that, and you mentioned a coach, which I think is good because you've got that fresh pair of eyes sometimes that can come in and not be so emotional, especially around expenses, because they're sometimes hard to get rid of. But that idea of, is that the owner that's mostly taking on those roles in terms of like, cause that's, I mean, in my head, I'm thinking it is because it's like, you're the one making the decision to cut the expense or not. You're the one making the decision to go after that client, say, hey, I need you to pay your bill, you know?
Yeah. So good question. So my previous company, my agency was founded by a guy who was a CPA, and it was good at first because he knew all the things, but it ended up being a pretty big bottleneck because he wanted to go through everything, and it made us worse because he knew too much. It was like the curse of knowledge, sort of like how I'm a measurement guy and my melon measurement sucks, right? Mm-hmm. It did for a long time because I was like, they're like, well, Jeff should do that. And I was like, actually, no, I'm the CEO of the company. I'm doing everything else. Like it's gonna be the last thing I do because I know that if I can always do an all nighter and pull it together. Right. So having a CPA, so we eventually hired a controller, which is like it's a role called a financial controller. This is actually more common than a CFO in a small business. And that controller is sort of the person who oversees the bookkeeper. They do the financial statements and reports. They're sort of approving expenses. They're approving people's time off. Our controller actually did HR too. It was sort of like a all-in-one thing. But a lot of small businesses actually have that type of role, a controller. And that's sort of like the one who that, like, if you don't do it yourself, so you do it yourself until you get bad at it, right? Until it's noticeably a problem for your company that you're doing it. And then you hire that. My wife was our controller basically in my company until we had a kid. I believe that your wife might be in a controller role
exactly
as well.
Right. Yep.
But it's usually somebody who's, they don't even necessarily need to be full-time in a business, but they sort of take over the entire financial, sometimes HR function in a business and bridge the gap until you are at a certain revenue point where there's so much more to lose from having a controller to having to have this CFO, right? Generally, you hire for risk aversion, not so much for you hire for competency, of course. You want competent people, but you hire the role based on how much risk you have. I think, you know, it's more like that versus growth necessarily.
Well, and that's exactly what I was going to ask is that CFO role. And I like the idea of the financial controller, because I think that's a small business term for a CFO, yep. Right? I think you're spot on there. And to your point, that person or that role, right? We don't, it doesn't always have to be a person, but at least you have that. If that's the owner, right? If you're a smaller business, you don't have that additional person there in terms of headcount. But is this the bummer? Like, is this the person who's going, no, you can't do that. No, we have to cut that expense. No, we have to do this. Meanwhile, there's that sort of on the marketing side is how I think about most, you know, most entrepreneurs are always like, grow, sell, yeah. You know, take risk. And this person's the one that's going like, that's the, you know, if you're the entrepreneur, it's hitting the gas all the mm-hmm. time. This role is always hitting the brake.
Yeah.
You know, like, is that a balance kind of thing? And can it be misintegrated, to make up a term, I think, but where you're not quite integrating it properly, where there's too much break, can it yeah. hurt the company by going too far down that rabbit hole? And maybe that's what you were talking about when you had the CPA, you know, type of thing. But can
yeah.
you over control this and
oh, yeah.
balance between those two?
Yeah, I mean, well, being married now for over a decade to a person who worked in an accounting firm and is in this business and is also an attorney, I realized that they are sort of bummers to people like me and you, entrepreneurs. That is a bummer. And sometimes you got to take it with a grain of salt, and sometimes you got to understand what their love language is. And that's what I've had to adjust to. Actually, funny thing is you and my wife have a similar love language, which is put it into a spreadsheet and show me the numbers. And then you'll buy into it in a second. I need to have a well-formulated argument. And my wife prepared me for 10 years for our partnership in doing that. And so, yeah, it needs to be in a spreadsheet. Whereas I do the math in my head and I can make a decision in like 10 seconds. Like I know, like I'm like, bam, 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 bam. And I was like, that's probably what's going to be. And you're like, well, how do you know that? Where's the evidence? And I was like, oh, I got to show you my work, right? So your love language is show me the work. And that's a good controller they should do. And then it's like, okay, well, who's there could be a control thing. Like, is the controller your business, like your equal partner, or is that somebody who's a role you hire? And do you want to respect that role? Or do you want to like, be like, okay, I take your advisement and then I'm going to go do what I think is right. Now, the reason why this can create tension and conflict, like we described, is If you only look at what's there, you can't see the vision of the future, right? It's impossible to look at past numbers, past performance to really see what's going on in the future, because all they know is the past. So if you had a really good year in 2023 and you're like, this is amazing, and then they're like, okay, well, let's do the same thing in 2024. It's like, okay, well, no, I actually think we're going to grow again. Like I know these market conditions. Like, so you're going to like the owner or the entrepreneur is always going to push forward and say growth, growth, growth. This person, if you let them only look at 2023, then you're sort of missing what the potential is there. So you have to really be careful with overdoing the numbers or underdoing the numbers. You have to have enough to go on. And so then that's where the conflict comes from, is that one person sees growth without any evidence, which is the entrepreneur. and the other person sees growth based on the facts, right? So it's really hard to have somebody, and you want them. You don't ever want your controller or your CFO to ignore facts. Like, that's their job, is literally to collect the facts and present you the best version of those facts. Versus the entrepreneur is like, okay, well, I can accept those facts, but I need to go forward. I want to grow this thing even further. So that's where a lot of that tension and conflict happens. And it really comes down to how mature the business is as to which one wins. And it's not even a question of winning. It's which, like, how do you present this thing in a way that both get the wins they want? I always say that, I'll hand it over to you in a second, but I always say, like, if the reason why CFOs aren't good entrepreneurs is because they would never get started. They would never start in the first place.
Because all they see is risk.
Yeah, the numbers don't indicate it. Everything's a risk, right? So they would never do that. Versus me, I'm all risk. Like, I have no problem with risk at all. And that's why those are the people who start companies, people with a higher risk profile.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because an entrepreneur, you're right, we're sort of built differently, right? We just don't see the risk everybody else does. And at the same time, that can be a detriment because people risk too much and then lose it all, you know, and not realizing they're doing that. I think one aspect of that CFO role, specifically around the financial controller stuff, is that a lot of small businesses miss is forecasting.
Yeah,
I think some of them are okay at expenses, managing expenses. Some of them are okay at the cash flow stuff, though I think it's less that are okay at that. Yeah. But when it comes to forecasting and knowing where you're going to be in 6 months, most people are not good at that. Yeah. One thing that we have done that I think helps an awful lot with that, because I like to try to combine the best of both worlds wherever I can. Like, the CFO, that role, that DNA, that risk aversion needs to be in the organization. Because if you have a car with no brakes, you will not have a car for very long, right? Eventually, you're going to want to brake because you're going to need to. It's just how you drive a car. And at the same time, you can't have a car with no gas pedal either, because it's just going to sit in the driveway. So you need both. You have to have both. So what we've done with forecasting is sort of combine the best of both worlds, where we're forecasting from a marketing standpoint. Okay, here's how many people we're going to have at these, you know, specific offers, and here's how many of those are going to go to the cart and eventually convert for this amount of revenue that we expect to happen on whatever the week is that we're forecasting for. So that CFO role is kind of doing that. At the same time, it is very mathematical. Right. And so this is, you know, when Jeff was talking about how him and I have these conversations, it's very true. I'm always like, is this a mathematically viable funnel? You know, this is the phrase I use all the time, but you can see it in the forecast. And if it is, you're like, all right, like, if the math proves out well, then let's do it. Yeah. And then what happens is the marketing side, right, which is the one that doesn't typically look at risk first. Let's just say that, like, it's not they ignore risk entirely, but they definitely aren't focused on it. So their thing is like, go, 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 go. It's going to work out. It's going to work out. We'll figure it out when we get there type of mentality. That financial controller is more like, okay, let's think this thing through. Let's take a couple of weeks to ponder it. And that's too slow. But both of them combined, right? Now the marketer's not going so fast. The CFO's not going so slow, but the car's moving and it's under control. The business is under control. And you don't have the bumps and the car wrecks that otherwise you would have, I think, with a lot of that. And so that's one way I think is if, you know, specifically the forecasting step is making it so that you can forecast, say, okay, how are things going to work? And I think you can speak to, because I've been doing that for a while, but I would like you to speak to that because you've gone through that process recently as we've started working together, where it's like, okay, let's think of, like, for example, there's a really good tool called Geru that we use, right? GERU, for those that are interested. And it plots out helps us plot out the user journeys, you know, and then we can see, like, does this thing actually make sense? So there's a little bit of numbers that help keep the realistic part of it, but there's still that little bit of the dreamy marketer who's saying, okay, yeah, but I know I can hit it if we do it like this, you know? Yep.
Yeah. So I love it. So episode 43, we talked about forecasting techniques and I had mentioned that you're top notch in that area. And forecasting is definitely a CFO thing. And so you can see in Mercer's business, he's been the CFO role, right? Like you don't need a virtual CFO because you're doing forecasting. Now, I've done forecasting for the last several years as well. Like, I think the first 3 years, I didn't have enough of a baseline to do any forecasting. But then starting like 2019, 2020, I was doing forecasts as well. My thing was I didn't really keep up with it, right? So I'd start the year and then things went bad and then I'd adjust it like a couple times a month or a couple times a year. It wasn't like a weekly thing. So you've definitely introduced me to the weekly forecasting, which is, it's great. Because if you have a bad week, you have to be accountable for it. You can't be like, oh, I had a bad quarter. I need to be accountable for that. It's like a bad week. And you're letting people know like, hey, this didn't hit. Like, yeah, we expected this. And so you're reinforcing that. And it's like what gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed gets done, right? Now, it doesn't mean that you have to be hit your forecast every time, but you at least have to have accountability to why it didn't happen, so you don't do the same thing over again or make adjustments. And so that level is really important in a business. I think everybody should do it, even if it's just monthly forecasting. I know you have a forecasting template that you've put out there that's really good, but and I have them in too that we put into the programs that I've developed as well. So like the idea here is, yes, you need to do that weekly. I think I would, you know, maybe I would love to hear what you think about this, Mercer, but like, I think you should start with annual, like how much money do I think we're going to make this year, then get to quarterly, then get to monthly, and then get to weekly. And that's like an evolution, and it might take a year to do each of those things. And it might be that you aren't the one that runs it at that point. Like once you get from monthly to weekly, if the burden of going from monthly to weekly is that you don't want to do it yourself, then that's when you might want to bring in that virtual CFO or you know, hold your bookkeepers more accountable or make that expense. Because honestly, the difference is made up in spades for what that expense is in the amount of profit you have, because you're not waiting until the end to see if you're profitable. You're accountable every single week to expenses, but more, not so much to expenses, but more towards revenue.
Yeah, that makes sense. I, you know, it's funny because when I'm thinking about this role too, I'm thinking, do I need to hire a CFO or do I just need to make sure that in our business, the questions that a CFO would be bringing up are being asked, right? Yeah. So it's like, I don't necessarily need the person, but I do need what they would be asking about, yeah, you know, and wanting, yep, to know, and the reports they would be using and all of that. And I think going back to your forecasting thing, for me, I would do minimal monthly, but I would do it the way you talked about, which is, hey, what do you want to be for the year? Cool, let's break that into quarters. Okay, cool, let's break that into months. Yeah. And the reason that I would do that is because at least you've got 12 different times to adjust the steering wheel. Yep. If you just look at the end of the year to say, well, how did we do this year? Like it's already over. It kind of almost doesn't matter because you, yeah, can't do anything about it, good, bad, or ugly, right? But if it's every month you're looking at it, okay, January was a bad month. You find out the first week of February typically that January is a bad month, and you go, okay, well now we got 11 months left, yep, you know, to get to where we want to go. And that's ultimately why I do weekly, because I like having 52 different times where I can turn the steering wheel.
Heck yeah,
you know, and it makes it a little bit simpler. But as you were talking, it was like that was the thing for me, is like writing down the questions that a CFO would be asking to make sure that the CFO role is implanted, right? Yep. Embedded in our organization. Because if you don't have those questions being asked, if you're not paying attention to them, if you're going, oh, you know, like the annoying CFO is going to be like, hey man, you're about to put $40,000 into a budget for paid ads. Show me how this is going to work. And the marketer goes, no, it's fine because I have a friend of mine that did the same thing and it worked just fine and blah, blah, blah. And they don't really have the math behind it, but they kind of have the stories and the in their head, the enough evidence to take action, right? Marketers will do that. And I think that's important because marketers need to do that because they're always on the edge of, yep, of getting out in the prospect. You need that skill. It's a very important skill. I myself do not have that. So I love that you do. But that CFO comes in and says, well, yeah, but, and then I think as a smaller business, if you don't have multiple people on your team, you have to have that opposite conversation. Like in measurement marketing, we teach trust but verify, which is kind, yeah, of like, you know, hey, trust that you've done it right. But really what you do is you instantly change your mind on it. You go, okay, I'm going to verify that the errors are in front of me. And you look for what's wrong. You look for those errors. Because if you just double check that you did it right, you're going to look for where you did it right. And you miss the obvious errors because you weren't looking for them. So that verify part is important because you switch your mindset. And I think that's what it's like with the CFO role a little bit. It's like, let's go back to the question and say, okay, but what if this ad spend was going to be a waste, right? How would I know it's, you know, how is it supposed to work? How many clicks am I going to get from that 40,000? When can I test this a little bit before I just put all 40,000 on the budget? Can maybe I can ramp up into it a little bit? And that little, that, those questions that a CFO would be asking, even if it's in the back of your head, I think are important to list down. Because again, it taps the brakes a tiny bit. It doesn't have to stop you. You don't have to just ask those questions, but it does tap the brakes a little bit. And that gives you more control over the car, so you don't accidentally spin out of control. Because I've seen that happen with all sorts of companies where they were, you know, these flash in the pan brands that were amazing. Everyone's talking about them because they just did their big giant launch, whatever the thing is. And then, mm-hmm, they're gone because their company spun out of control or wasn't actually profitable and no one knew it. You know, they pay the affiliates too. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that goes on that would have were super obvious if anyone had cared to look. And that's what the CFO's role is to say, hey, look at this. Like, this may not be the prettiest thing, but it's good that you see it because you can address it if it's not the prettiest thing, you know, if the numbers don't look right.
Yeah, you just got me thinking, like, even with the weekly stuff, we're it's more of a revenue thing than expenses, because expenses are really hard to do on a weekly basis. But we've had several episodes recently, episode 40 about expense versus investments, the one about forecasting, where we even said, like, we need to do a monthly expenses meeting. And I think that's key. Like, as we're merging and integrating, it's like, we need to go through and be like, do we really need this anymore? Because I think that's actually a bigger sign of profit than revenue. Like basically a revenue forecast is more of a sales forecast meeting, you know, which we did at my agency. And then every month we do the expenses as well. So it's like every week do a sales one. So I think weekly revenue, monthly expenses, because just that's you can't really do it any more than that. Because not all expenses hit at the same time and everything like that. But you could do weekly expenses as well. If you had the report handy, you could be like, hey, here's what came in. Here's what we need, you know, what do we need these things? The other thing is, you were, you know, like investments. Like, I'm like, I've made a lot of investments in a lot of things that are long-term payoffs. And it's like, at some point, when do you stop investing in the long-term with undefined versus defined, right? So that's another thing that those are tough conversations that a CFO will have with you. It's like, hey, you invested in this funnel, or you invested in writing your book. These are two things that I've just invested in.
This team member.
Yeah, this team member, this mastermind, this conference, like, hey, or the other thing is how much time you dedicate to something. Hey, you spent all this time on this thing and it only makes this much. Like, that's actually, like, those are the level of granular, tough decisions that somebody who's not emotionally tied to can be better at than the owner, right? That's another thing that you get a benefit from having that role, is that if it's how you've always done it and you've had this client for a long time, then you're like more attached to it than somebody who comes in from the outside, like, why are you doing this? Like, this doesn't make sense. Replace this with that. And you and I have had those conversations, like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to try to throw your baby out with the bathwater. I'm not trying to kill your baby, but, like, this is not the best thing to do long term. And you've told me that a few times, and I've told you that a few times. And I think we both, like, it's planted the seed, and then it takes a little bit longer to deal with it. But those are the things where, like, oh yeah, actually, if we want to increase profits by X dollars, these are the three things we could do today. And then the question is, why don't you just do it then? Like, a CFO would probably just do it. They'd be like, hey, the decision's made then. You know, when it's the owner, it's like, no, I want to see this thing through, right? There's a lot more, because it's emotional. CFOs are not emotional people, from my experience at all, right? So
it's whatever the spreadsheet says, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you, just a real life example, just for everybody, that Jeff and I went through yesterday with the team, was around Zapier. Because as from marketers, right, we're always like, oh, we'll just do Zapier. And this is with the conversation, we're building offers and funnels and all the fun stuff. And, you know, all these zaps are happening and everyone's talking about all the zaps and the builds and the automation. And that's the marketer's conversation. Let's just set up a Zap. We'll do this. We'll do this. We'll automate. We'll do this. And everyone's doing this. And it's all being built out. And then the CFO, you know, questioning comes in, and where it's like that role and says, hey, we have two Zapier accounts now. Why are we paying for two Zapier accounts? Right. And it's like, oh yeah. So the marketers are all excited because everything's being automated. They're not even thinking about the cost of it. It doesn't come up. It's more like, how do we get this thing to talk to this thing so we can do this thing? Oh, this is going to be great. And no one's even considering the cost. The CFO comes around and says, okay, wait, we're paying for this twice. You know, what's going on, right? Why don't we just combine this stuff? And is that as sexy as setting up a brand new funnel to get a bunch of revenue? Maybe not. But structurally, it makes the whole system more stable. So the revenue is more likely to continue with less stress. And you're not constantly, you know, putting out fires and all the other things that might come up from the complexity of things like, oh, we're paying for this thing twice.
Yeah.
You know, I think I remember you talking about the managing expenses episode, which I actually just re-listened to, by the way. It was awesome. Good job. But it was about the Adobe thing when you're like, I'm paying for three Adobe accounts and can't even sign into one. You know, it's like that sort of thing. That stuff happens. And the CFO is that role. It doesn't have to be a person necessarily, but that role has to be in the organization. It says, hey, do we really need this? Like, what do you, what is this for? Is this still paying off?
Yeah, it's like the concept of technical debt, right? Like, if you have technical debt with your tech, then you need to clean it up. You also have business debt. The longer you've been in business, the more you have of it. And debt doesn't always mean that you owe money to somebody. It means that you have expenses that are basically causing you debt, right? By just even having them in place, and cleaning those up is a great exercise and is something that a CFO role can do for you. So that's all I really have on this topic. I think that it's great. I think that you should aspire to have that role, but do it in pieces. Start with the easiest thing to replace and work your way up. I call that the process pyramid. You go tactical first, which is bookkeepers. You go management second, which is the controller. And then you go into strategic, which would be letting somebody else be the CFO instead of yourself. Or if you're never really good at that in the first place, find a business partner who's good at that, or find somebody who can give you that level of insight, no matter where you're at in business, because those people are very good at seeing what's the number, you know, seeing through the numbers into what you should do.
Yeah, I love that. And just to give that a second, like the other is making sure that you've got those questions. So it doesn't have to be a person. So no one's listening to this going, oh yeah, I have to go hire a CFO now. Like, that's not what we're necessarily saying. Maybe the organization is ready for something like that. But you at least have to have the conversations in your organization that a CFO would cause to happen, to think about that. Because that you know, tapping the brake occasionally is not a bad thing. It keeps the car under control. It's not just to slow down the car, it's to keep the thing under control. And that's what the CFO's role in an organization is. So make sure that in whatever level that you need that in your own organization, that you take some action steps on that. With that, we want to thank you again for sharing this podcast, for leaving a rating about this podcast. That's people are starting to do that now. So thank you for that. More importantly, in my own personal opinion, talking with others about this podcast and about the stuff that you've learned, because when you actually talk about it and explore how other people are, do your other favorite entrepreneur friends that you're hanging out with, how are they handling the CFO role in the organization? Are they even asking those questions, or do you, we probably all do, know people who didn't and they ran off the rails because they didn't have it. So thinking about that, implementing it, that's the stuff that actually builds skills. And that is what Jeff and I want for you. So with that, thanks again for listening to Business Unfiltered. We'll see you on the next episode.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Business Unfiltered with your hosts, Mercer and Jeff Sauer. Be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and tell a friend what you've learned today. Want to connect? Visit us at businessunfiltered.fm.